I want to welcome you. I'm Vicki Parker, and this is the Committee for Seniors with Vision Loss. I'm chairperson, and we're very excited about our program. We will not have a nutritionist this morning. I had two nutritionists cancel, and this weekend is the convention for the National Nutritionist Group, and there is also a local function going on, so it was very problematic. So let's begin. Maybe we'll go around the room and have people introduce themselves and say where they're from. That would be great, so everybody has a sense who is here. I'm going to start with to my left.
I'm Annie Doyle. I'm from Encino, and I'm here with my guide dog, Kenneth, who's from Guiding Eyes.
I'm Mike Keith Lee from Mountain View, and I've just got a cane.
I'm Ron Smith, and I'm the other half of this chair, wonderful chairperson here, leading the group. Thank you.
Lynn Ishihara from the Greater Los Angeles Chapter.
Juliana Beghini from Burbank.
Thank you.
Christine Bailey from Riverside.
I'm giving you the mic.
Joe Xavier from Sacramento.
Joe Smith from Sacramento.
Thank you. Okay.
My name is Gail Miller, and I'm from Merced.
And I'm Anita Arakawa from Temple City, California.
Hi, I'm Charles Navarrete from West Covina, California.
And he is our new board member. Woohoo! And last but not least,
I'm Marie Brown Palmieri. I'm from the San Gabriel Valley chapter. And if any of you need help, let me know.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. Just a few housekeeping notes. There is water in the back of the room. And in the back, right-hand corner, as you come in, so you'd be facing front, is a restroom in suite. Woo, that's special. I don't think that's ever happened in all the time I've ever done a meeting or been to meeting. So that's great. We have some publications. I was hoping Bonnie Remy will probably, I'm not sure if she's here, not in the room yet, but we have some new publications that are up on our CCB website for seniors, and they're very exciting about seniors and vision loss. So if you know anyone or you have a chance, go look at the website and check those out. All right, so I just want to wait a few more minutes to see Linda's coming. So we'll hold on and chat amongst yourself for a couple minutes, and then we'll get started in about 5 minutes. It's CCB. It's on the CCB website.
I got the ALB for you.
What's the
ALB?
Oh,
the listening?
Thing,
yeah.
So the receiver?
Yeah.
So, Mike? So, we're going to get started. Linda Cantrell is not here. She's our falls prevention specialist. She was going to start our program. However, flexibility is the characteristic, one of the main characteristics of a positive mental health and positive attitude. So we're going to be flexible. What I'm planning on doing for this committee, and I'll just say this, next year I'm hoping to have to do three phone calls, conference calls, so that we can all stay connected and provide information. And our first speaker was not able to be here today, Natalie Nankin. We're talking about doing a phone conference call and talk about nutrition and aging that way. So we will hopefully have a conference call in January and two other calls throughout the year which you can participate in. And if you have any ideas of topics or special interests, please contact me. I'm on the CCB list. If you want my information, see me after. All right? So we are going to begin our program with Dr. LaDonna Ringering from the Center for the Partially Sighted. And she has been the administrative director, CEO of the, I don't want to get this wrong, clinic for more than 24 years. And she has her PhD is in psychology, but with a specialty in gerontology. Is that correct? Okay, I got it correct. So she'll, I'm sure, tell you more about herself and maybe a little bit about the center and what we do, and then she'll talk to you about aging and staying positive and healthy mentally.
Thank you, Vicki. It's great to be here with everybody and see a lot of familiar faces. I'm looking forward to more of a discussion than a presentation since we have a small group. But I'll start out, as Vicki suggested, telling you a little bit about the center. I believe probably most of you do know about what the work we do, but I'll just briefly review. We're a comprehensive low vision rehabilitation center. The three branches that we have of our work are the optometric, where we evaluate any remaining vision, any usable vision, and put that along with a person's goals, whether they be work goals or independence goals or recreation goals or any combination, which usually it is. And then we will match whatever devices that can help incorporate the use of the vision that they have into helping them accomplish those goals. Now, of course, we're also open to any type of strategy that will allow them to reach their goals, and sometimes that includes the additional services that we provide, which is in the rehabilitation department, where we offer orientation mobility and independent living skills training, both in the home or in the office or at the schools. Sometimes we'll provide the services helping people adjust to a new school environment or a new work environment or a new home environment. So we continue those other services in that area. And then we offer psychological and social support by connecting people to the community, connecting people to groups such as yours, such as CCB, and other groups that where they can get the services that they might need to be independent in the community. And then we have a large component, and Vicki is part of that, where we provide support groups, individual counseling, both face-to-face and by telephone. And I'll just mention that we also have a very substantial pediatric program where we start evaluating babies as young as 3 months old and can continue their services as they transition from one phase to the other. Now that we've been in existence for close to 40 years, some of the children that we saw are now middle-aged, and so we're still helping them along with whatever is new in the area of low vision. And a lot of that recently, as I'm sure you all appreciate, is the technology, which really opens up. There's such a huge difference in opportunities as I've seen it since I started at the Center for the Partially Sighted with its founder, Sam Janinski, shortly after they opened the doors, and what the technology that he had to function with was quite revolutionary at that point, but it was rather bulky and cumbersome compared to what we have today. I remember when I first met him at his office at Rand Corporation, because he was in both places at the time, And his closed circuit TV system was a very sort of a bulky monitor that was up on a platform, and then he had lights coming down, floodlights coming down from a rack on his reading material, and a very mechanical type platform where he'd have his materials. And this is what he was reading, and now we can all have the same kind of function and accomplish even more with something that we can put in our purse and our pocket. So it's come a long way. So we have different opportunities now than we did way back when. I'm sounding like a geriatric person myself. But anyway, let's start with kind of an overview. And we have a lot of company now as we get older. The population of older adults in the U.S. from 2010 and projected up to 2030, just in a 20-year time frame, up from 40 million to 70 million. So it's almost doubling in a very short period of time. And a corollary of that is that in 2010, it was 12% of the population, and in 2030, it'll be closer to 21% of the population. And this is what this provides is a lot of impetus for people to not necessarily take advantage of that fact, but promote their business to that population. So I think you can find that there will be a lot more innovations that can be very helpful as we ourselves become older, and as our clients, for those of us who are providing services, also become older and have more complex needs. So what I'd like to talk about is successful aging. I know that there was one in the program that talked about positive thinking and the influence that can have, but I want to be broader than that and talk about successful aging on several levels, and how we can, what types of tips people have provided in advice. And I'd like to open that up. When I go through those points, I'd really like to open that up to see how you have accommodated in some of those areas and how you've used these tips from your perspective of having a visual impairment. And some of these adaptations I think you've needed to make that some people that are fully sighted don't really face until they get to be, you know, 70, 80. A clear example is driving. Well, you know, a lot of people are able to drive well into their 90s. Well, you've had to adapt to not driving much earlier than that, so you have a different perspective. So I'm hoping we can get more of a discussion with some of those points. But let's start out with, what do we consider successful aging? I think most of you would agree that if you can stay healthy and avoid any serious illnesses, that's certainly part of the success and what goes along with successful aging. Another part of it is being able to have good cognitive functioning, being able to engage with people and be interested in life around you and solve problems and be adaptive to whatever issues come your way. And then the other aspect of it is engagement with life. You're involved with something. You have a purpose. Life has meaning to you. So if you have the physical health, and you have the high functioning cognitively, and you're socially and mentally engaged, I would say that that would be, those would be the main elements of healthy aging. Is there anything else any of you would add to that or would like to elaborate on from any of those points? Right, right. I absolutely agree with you. I think that's a great point. And there's a lot of being attention being paid to that recently in the focus on being who you are in the moment and enjoying that moment. Absolutely. There was another comment on the other side of the room. Right, that's a good point. The keeping a sense of empowerment that you are capable, and I think that your point is well taken. That if vision loss occurs later in life, it can create a lot of anxiety at first, when people really don't know what life holds for them, and they're very fearful about the loss of independence. And then hopefully they turn to get the kind of help in rehabilitation services and learning what they are capable of doing. And so the anxiety, they do learn that, yes, they can live independently and they can do a lot of the things that they feared that they wouldn't be able to do after a vision loss. And then they're looking for the richness in life, the losses in what they used to enjoy. And that's where the depression can fit in if people aren't flexible and looking for things that are available to them and willing to try new things. Okay, we have a question in there, a comment. Charles?
Okay, here's the mic, Charles.
Yeah, for me, it's been a phase of transition. I retired about a year and 1 month ago, August of 2014. And I had been working for 44 years as you know, in a legal career. And so I was happy in doing that because I felt I was, you know, I was busy solving problems, making decisions. So the transition, it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. I think I was ready to move on. I was 68 years old. And so in this past year, I've done a lot of reading. And I've also had to deal with health problems that come up. I've been a diabetic for a while, and in April of 2014, I was put on insulin, which was a transition. And more recently, I've had the deal with prostate cancer. And, you know, I just completed my radiation treatments on October 1. So, you know, it hasn't been a time when I got depressed, because I felt pretty content with my life, and felt that, you know, as long as I take care of myself, watch my diet, follow the doctor's orders, I'm going to be okay. So, you know, it's been just adapting to those different conditions that come on with age. And I think that as long as you keep yourself, your mind occupied, which I do with my activities in different organizations, you know, it works out.
Thank you, Charles. And I'm glad to hear that your retirement transition was smooth, and now I wish you the best with the health issues, because that's definitely a challenge. No question about that. There's yes, Vicki.
And I think the, I didn't know if you were going to move on yet, or were you going to address that? Okay. I think there's a, at least I see, if you could be resourceful and flexible, but also open to doing things differently and having a different experience that you might enjoy. For example, if you like painting, but you figured out how to do it differently, and maybe you didn't get the same result, but you got a result and you still enjoyed the painting process, that you might continue doing that. Or I've had people say, well, I did this activity for years and I could see, and I don't want to do it now. But if you do it anyway, the result may not be the same, or it could be the same, but you come about it a different way of doing it, and you still have that enjoyment and pleasure, so you don't have to give up all the things that you love doing.
So I guess what I want to do is sort of add to what others have said, is feelings of isolation. I know that does occur with vision. Like, it occurs anyway. You know, if your friends are passed on, your spouse is passed on, and so here you are, and or you move to be closer to family, and now you're leaving what you know in your comfort zone to live closer to a daughter or something. But the feelings of isolation and not feeling supported. And so the whole idea of learning how to gather a support system, or at least having feelings of being supported, I think are very, very important.
Well, thank you. Any other comments? And we'll certainly have plenty of opportunities.
My name is Cam Schur. I'm sorry, I was late, but based on what the previous people have said, I find that humor really helps me. Finding the humorous side of things as I go along and having a good laugh at myself is really very therapeutic. Thank you.
Well, I think that's wonderful. It's also, they say, laughter is the best medicine. So, and especially if you can laugh at yourself. Not necessarily laugh at somebody else, but if you can laugh at yourself, that's very good. Well, it's good to see that people are really giving it some thought and being careful about that particular phase in life, because it has changed quite a bit over the last 100 years, and how people faced aging before, it was a very short period. Now it's not such a short period. You have it's what some people call the third age. You have your youth, you have your middle age, and then there's this long stretch for a lot of people. Unfortunately, not for some, but for a lot of people, there's quite a long, significant stretch from the end of your work and family life until you reach infirmity of very old age. There's a lot to do in that time, but there are a lot of challenges. So really giving it a lot of thought and sharing ideas with people, I think, and not being isolated, I think, is very important at this particular point in time. One of the things that some psychologists have talked about this phase of life is the focus is you can go the direction where you integrate what's all your life experiences have been. You can use the time for that, or you can sort of go in the direction of despair. They call it integration versus despair. And I guess I would see clearly people who are coming to a CCB conference and wanting to learn from one another and wanting to contribute and wanting to be advocates, you're clearly not going into the despair direction. But as you do have time, I think it's very rewarding also to try to use this time to sort of integrate all your life's experiences to help you know who you really are and really fully be yourself at that stage. Because you don't need to make an impression on anybody anymore. And, well, you probably never did, but certainly that you come to that understanding that you can be fully yourself, express yourself, and part of that is integration of all the previous times, all the previous phases in your life. And I know that some people take the opportunities to do that by going to their school, their graduation anniversaries, reunions, that's what I'm trying to say, the reunions. And you can reminisce with a lot of your old friends. Have anybody of you been to any significant reunions? Not really? Oh, Charles has. Uh-huh. And it's kind of interesting to interact with people who knew you from early, early years. I'm sorry, Anita?
When you recited.
Oh, yes. For some of you, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then on the other hand, I'm sure some of you have seen people who have moved into despair at that phase, perhaps your parents, perhaps people you've graduated with, and that can, again, lead to a lot of depression, and sometimes in many cases it can lead to self-imposed isolation. And substance abuse, that can be a very common way that people deal with their depression and feeling like, well, what's left for me? You know, it's just, this is what I should expect with old age anyway, so I'm not going to try. And I'm sure those of you who work with older adults in your rehab training or whatever it is you're doing, see some of those more destructive ways of aging. So integration, I think, it can be a lot of fun, and it can be very helpful at that point in life. The other thing that we have the opportunity to do is to give back, and part of that engagement is we have opportunities such as advocacy, what you're doing right now. Volunteering, mentoring, if you have younger people, co-workers, nieces and nephews, places where in your church or your social groups where you can share your knowledge. That can be another very fulfilling part of that third age that I was talking about. And then there's sometimes, of course, you can just continue to make a contribution in a way where you can earn some money, and that's even better. I think there are people that I know in this room who thought they were retiring, and then they got back and continued to make a contribution and got paid for it here and there. Sound familiar to anybody? So that's a wonderful solution. The other, I think I briefly alluded to it when I was talking about our founder, is the technology that's available now can really make getting older and facing difficulties and changes, health problems, sensory problems, it can really help us weather that and continue to function well. Everything from the technology in a computer to some of the latest in bionics, where and other replacement surgeries that are so much more successful and leave you so much more functional these days. And things like this are coming around all the time. We're in an age where there's tremendous innovation in those areas. So in that way, we're very fortunate to have the world be dealing with our own aging process and our families in an era where there's so many more tools and so much being, again, it goes back to paying attention to this growing population. A lot of people are attending to that and developing things that will help other people, help you, younger people in their work, but it will also help older people function at their best in doing what they want to do. So a lot of the technology on the computer, for example. The downside of it in terms of technology is where we're open to fraud and scams and getting hacked and all of that. And I know that a lot of older adults are fall prey to scams, and that's something that those of you who work with older adults need to provide the education about how to spot and how to report fraud and scams, because older adults do become victims. And I imagine that happens for other people that have vision issues too, that people can take advantage, and you have to be careful and give some tips to and learn how yourself to protect yourself. So well, I'm not sure in terms of I'm talking more in terms of the very elderly, so I'm not sure I know in terms of if that even is the case. Yeah, there's a comment back. Well, yes, certainly that, with that part, sure. The hacking, Yes, I agree. Absolutely, that's a very good point. And what I was referring to is the scams that a lot of older people fall prey to on the phone about how to make money and how to win sweepstakes and things like that, how to get rich quick schemes that where they just dump money. Right. be a fair sign.
I have a hard and fast rule over the phone. I have a hard and fast rule. If I detect that it's a telephone solicitation, I simply say, stop. I do not accept telephone solicitations. Thank you. Goodbye. That's it. I just don't do it. Thank you.
Oh, hold on a sec. Let me, because we're recording, so I kind of want to get it on the mic.
I wanted to try and answer the other person's question about why does it seem that so many scams and people taking advantage of other people is happening, particularly to the elderly. One of the reasons, and this is from my own experience with my mom, is if you have mild dementia or even or further, you're not thinking very clearly, and those people are lumped in with everybody else. So they might be more likely to be scammed than anybody else. The other reason is, as some of the older people that I've talked to, they are not familiar with technology. They say, oh, I do my email. Well, okay, but that's all they do. So they're not as conversant about being on the lookout, because they don't know that the person in Nigeria that says, hey, I've got $10 million and can you help me, you know, I'll put it into your account. You know, they don't know. And we laugh about it because that's, you know, we've all heard about that. There are some people that haven't, and they are more likely to be scammed. And the other part is what somebody else had said, was that, well, you know, if somebody needs help, because I know that with my elder relatives, they do want to be helpful. If somebody's selling magazines, they will try to buy it from them because the kid is going through school to school and needs it for his education. Well, maybe, maybe not. But they don't know either. So you've got that going. It's somebody that wants to be helpful, somebody that may have a form of dementia that adds to it. And to the person that was talking about telemarketers, sometimes I got to relay this. I like to have fun with them, and when they call, I'll go on. And somebody's trying to sell me insurance, and I said, oh, no, thank you, I don't need car insurance. Well, you know that they take advantage of women. And then I started almost crying. You're right. They're going to take advantage of me. Oh, God, I'm nothing. You're absolutely right. And then he said, ma'am, no, I'm not saying that. Yes, you are. You're telling me that I'm a horrible person. And he hung up so fast. Never called back again. Thank you.
I'll have to remember that. That's good. Okay. Getting back to some of the points about successful aging, I'm sure all of you heard the term use it or lose it, and that certainly applies to physical strength, which we really all need to keep as long as we possibly can, and we definitely find that as we get older, we need to take more time for maintenance. We can't just take our functions for granted. And what happens physiologically is if you don't use certain muscle groups or parts of your body and you're not active, the message comes back to your brain that, oh, you're not using this, you don't really need it, I don't need to put any energy into that particular muscle anymore, I'll send my energy somewhere else, and so you lose even more function. So it can really cascade. So
every 5 weeks
I've been getting a new type of approach. Every about once every 5 weeks, somebody calls me to tell me my computer has hacked into their computer. And half the time, I'm not even on the computer. They say, well, yes, it can happen when your computer's down. I said, no. I said, just keep away from me. If you keep calling me, I'm going to call the cops. And so 5 weeks later, I'll get another call from somebody else doing the same line. But it's they want you to do something. I don't even know what they want you to do because I'm not going to find out. You know, anyway, I just thought everybody should know that there's something else going on out there. Thank you.
Well, you can take your pick. We got a couple of ideas here about how to deal with those kinds of phone calls. Either be very firm and say, I don't accept them, or find a way to have fun with it. And right. If you're very creative, I guess you can have a lot of fun. If you're not in the mood, you don't have the time, then just don't engage. Well... Yes.
Yeah, this is Ron Smith. I just want to add to this whole topic we've been talking about, potential scammers and so forth. And I just realized that lately, it's just going to get worse for us in the future, and we need to be more cognitive of how we deal with potential scammers. With identity theft nowadays, it's so easy. I mean, everything out there is in a database. All your emails, if you have a Google account, I mean, everything is stored up there in the cloud, and they have access. And one thing especially is when you go to, like, county fairs or something like that, and you sign up for a sweepstakes and you fill out the form, they ask you all kinds of ID information. And even your Social Security number, they used to do it in the past. I don't know if they do it lately, because I don't fill out those forms anymore. But they gather this information, they put it in their database, they sell these lists, and they go round and around. That's why you're getting all these telemarketers calling, because people buy these lists and they're just floating out there, and they profile you on your even on your Google web page. If you use Google to do your surfing on the web, that's why they profile you with your IP address on your computer. And that's why they target the searches with the search engine, and why you come up with different results than the next person, because they've profiled you based on where you've been before. So they have this huge database on what your likes and dislikes are, and target you very easily. And it's just going to get worse in terms of all the data out there accessible by many people. So we just need to be careful on, how we... handle situations like that in the future.
Oh, Mike, here's the mic.
One thing I do, I have two telephones, and I found out that I get more solicitation on my landline phone than on my cell phone. So I did two things. First of all, I'm on Comcast, and Comcast has a facility that you can load on your iPhone to monitor your landline phone. That means that I have the facility called the ISP called Comcast. It has an iPhone application that monitors its landline phones, so you can monitor yours. So that leads to the second thing. I just unplug my landline. I hardly ever use it, because if I want to find out what's going on in my landline, like what messages are in my email, my voicemail, I just fire up the application on my iPhone and find out. And since my phone is unplugged, I don't hear it ringing. So the telemarketers can be happy if they want to just leave a message, you know. It's a sort of a high-tech thing, and maybe so many people doesn't work, but it works for me. Thanks.
Or do you want to take run the mic and do it? Okay. Or do you want you have to introduce yourself.
I have a question.
I don't have anything to say.
You just introduce yourself.
We're going
yourself.
To pass the mic to come in.
Oh, I guess I'm supposed to say I'm here. Robert Acosta, Chatsworth, California.
Here.
Ruth Ann Acosta, same place.
Is there anyone else?
Anybody else that hasn't introduced themselves? Okay, wait, let me, Isabel, where are you?
I'm over here.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Isabel Ybarra, Whittier, California.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, great, thank you.
Okay, you had a comment here?
Yes, thank you. The person who spoke about having a land phone and a cell phone, and that's Comcast, is it the same phone number?
No. Or
it's two different numbers. Okay, thank you.
Hi, Barbara Bowman. Also have a landline and a cell phone. I have the landline for people I haven't talked to in a while who may not know my cell phone number. They can leave a message. And otherwise, I do not answer the phone. It rings. It's set on two rings. So it isn't much of a bother. In fact, I've gotten so I don't even hear it anymore. And then I'll check at night to see if anyone that I want to talk to has called. Mostly I get hang-ups.
Thank you, Barbara.
Okay, well, thanks for sharing. It's good to share ideas about how to avoid annoying phone calls and how to cope with people who are trying to scam you. And Anita now has a comment. Can I?
With my exercise, I'm going to have a big lunch.
Actually, excuse me, I wanted two things. One is, this is where I think isolation is a real problem, because many people aren't aware of the latest scams or the latest this or that, and having a resource, I mean, this room should be filled, but it's not, and so having a vehicle by which to have this type of information available, which I'm sure it's always been a challenge. But I wanted to get back to your comment on use it or lose it. So is there evidence to indicate that if you don't use it, the brain actually sends a signal to not use that part of the body?
There are more seats up toward the front if more people are coming in. Okay, Anita asked if there's evidence that if you don't use a particular muscle group, does the brain actually send signals that's not being used? And it definitely does, and it's sort of like what we see in people who have in the field of low vision. We often see this: if people don't use their ability to use their vision to read, then we sort of have to start from scratch and start with small words and with the magnifiers or the new glasses, and then build up so that the brain pathway becomes activated again. And the same thing happens when people have strokes. There's the disconnection between the brain and the part of the body that's impacted. So definitely one needs to keep active in order to keep that physically fit as well. So that getting back to how one can do that and do it in a way that's safe. That's one of the things that I was kind of disappointed that Linda is not here to talk about fall prevention, because you do need the exercise, but there are limitations in how fast you can walk, where you can walk, how to avoid tripping, what you can do for exercise that will involve the whole body. I know a lot of people are finding something like yoga is and Pilates and exercises like that, where you are stationary, but you are also moving, and you're using many, many different muscle groups. So that's very important in terms of maintaining your cardiovascular system, your balance, and just in general, your sense of well-being. Does that answer your question, Anita? Okay. So how do people deal with getting the exercise they need? There's a Mike? Who's?
My wife and I take walks.
Okay, Mike, here.
My wife and I take walks every day, 30 minutes. And even if her knee's hurting, or even if my hips are hurting me, we take a walk. It happens.
Also, I know my mom walks, and we walk together, and we walk our dog, and we try to walk every day, and I think that's really, really, really helpful. But I also think having the right kind of shoes, and I know that was one thing Linda was going to talk about, is what kind of shoes and how to know it's the right kind of shoes to help preventing falls. So hopefully I can find someone else, or I can do a phone call with her.
And I do a lot of walking, especially in Riverside. My friend and I go to the gallery all the time, and we walk about 2 or 3 hours. And also, there's also walking clubs to join. There's Riverside Unified School District has a walking club to join. There's always walking clubs. You can go to some of your parks, and they're out there just walking at 7 o'clock in the morning. There's even slight little 3Ks and 2Ks for different kind of organizations like Heart Healthy and all that, and diabetes, too, that you can join.
Okay. And then Bob? Bob?
Do I need a mic? I'm an old
teacher. Yeah, I'm looking for you.
Oh, hello. Okay, I'm Bob Acosta. My guide dog gets me out, or I'd really be lazy, but he wants to go, and we walk. We try to get a half hour a day when we can. We use a treadmill. I don't use it. I don't know why I'm chicken when my wife, like when I'm alone. I just say, Ruth Ann, are you going to be there for a while in case I crash? I know there's a key, you know, that's tied to me, and if I fall, it'll stop, but I'm getting older and a little more cautious. And Ruth Ann, my wife, I'm very proud of her. She's facing knee surgery. She goes to the Brown Center at Cal State Northridge for disabled people. She goes swimming and aquatics. And I think I'm really proud of her for doing that. And the last thing I want to say is, at my age, when I fall, it's harder to get up. When I was 18 with blood dripping down my face, I leaped up. Oh, I don't want people to know I'm blind. That's okay. Not now. I call 911 or something. Thank you.
Well, not only is it harder to get up, but you're also at a much higher risk of breaking something as our bones get thinner and more fragile. So definitely you need to be safe in getting your exercise, but you also need to maintain it and be dedicated, and not just, as you're saying, whether you feel like it or not, you just get out there and do it. And when you are finished with it. You feel very good that you did. The other thing is, a lot of times people develop arthritis as they get older, and moving actually improves it. Even if you start out with more pain, it eases up with the exercise. So all the way around, keep active. And also keep your brain active. Keep reading, learning, join discussion groups, take classes. And not only the learning, but learning new information, but then what you do with it, how you use that information. I think that there are a lot of issues that we face where if we take a problem-solving look at it, or a problem-solving viewpoint as opposed to a complaining viewpoint, it's not only will it give us a solution a lot more quickly, but it's a lot better for the mind. Again, going into avoiding despair is to look at, okay, this is an issue. It's a very painful issue I'm dealing with. Maybe you're dealing with a disappointment in a friendship, or problems with your landlord or your boss or something like that. But if you come up with a problem-solving attitude as opposed to woe is me attitude, it will do two things. It'll keep you feeling more empowered, and it also will exercise your brain to be in a problem-solving mode. What can I do? What can I change? What's within my power to change? And what resources do I have to bring to the situation? And use that part of your brain to come up with a solution to the problem and move on. I think there's a lot been said about how important socializing is and avoiding. Anita, you made the point of how important it is to avoid isolation and how easy it is to be confronted with that. As one has various losses in your social circle, or you can't get to groups and you can't get around as easily. So then we need to turn to other ways, telephone contact, but make the point, just like you do with your physical movement, make the point of not becoming isolated, reaching out, finding ways to be with people. And they find that a particular type of socializing is helpful in terms of dealing with losses and stresses, and that's having a close confidant, as opposed to necessarily just a large group of acquaintances. But there's a significant difference between the stress reduction you get from a close confidant, someone that you feel that you can share everything or most everything, and that where it's mutual. That type of a relationship is very good for stress reduction and keeping you connected. Yes, we have a comment.
Hi. Before, I used to work in banking, right? And then, maybe like 5 years ago, I had a stroke. And the thing is, the first year I was mad and angry. Why, Lord, why? Because I lost part of my sight. And then when I go to Braille, I see people that are less vision than I am, or total. And you got to look at life as in a positive way of the things that we're able to do, and we're not. And say we try to be as strong and blessed that we're doing things that others cannot do, and we're just happy that looking at life, the positive stuff, whatever you can do, but try to do something. Don't look in the past, but look at what's now in the future, and just be happy. And that's the way I am. If people are like angry, if some people are upset and mad, I try to avoid them. But if somebody that I know, or someone that's sad or something, I cannot walk away from them. I'll go there and consult them, or just be blessed, and because God wouldn't walk away from me. Why would I walk away from somebody else? Because there's just people that in this world that need help, and we're here to help others, not ourselves. Thank you.
I just wanted to say too about the learning. There are new programs. The Senior Center Without Walls. I don't know if any of you know about that. It's over the telephone, and it's based in Oakland, and they have classes. They have all kinds of groups. SeniorCenterWithoutWalls.org, and you can look it up. There's a phone number you can call and register, and three times a year, I think there's a registration, and they change the classes up. And it's a really good way to talk to people, and you don't have to leave your home if you don't want to, and a way to connect with people. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Great resource. Thank you. So it's called Without Walls or Senior Center Without Walls?
I think it's called
Senior Center Without Walls. Senior Center Without Walls. So, yeah, if you Google that, and that sounds like a wonderful outlet. Thanks, Vicki. Okay, I think we had talked about being in the moment a number of times, and there's a lot of training now going on in mindfulness. Have any of you participated in mindfulness? I see, Vicki, you're raising your hand. Can you tell the people more, a little bit more about what that's involved?
What I have done is mindfulness meditation, which keeps you in touch with where you are in the moment, keeps you in touch with your body. You do a meditation, and I know they have walking mindfulness. They have regular mindfulness. Through UCLA, the MARC program, I just signed up for some mindfulness. Yes, I am mindless. Mindfulness meditation courses. They have them all over the city, and you can even do them online. There is a program, and they have free. So it's really supposed to be good for your brain, and they say that it can help change your brain chemistry as well as help with Alzheimer-related issues. So I don't know if that's just what I've read. I don't know that much about it. I just Google MARC, M-A-R-C, at UCLA, and the website will come up, and then I just go into it. At UCLA, MARC, Daniel Siegel is one of the forerunners in the research of mindfulness. And I don't know, Lalana, you probably know more about that than I do. Do you want to?
No, I think you've given a good summary. A lot of it is related to meditation. Certainly, the training focuses on meditation and being aware of your breathing and your physical posture and how your internal being just sort of aware of your breath and where you are in space. So that's one type of mindfulness. But I think other people have mentioned earlier in this group here about being in the moment and not just... So that's another... It's not the mindfulness training you're saying that it's more like yoga? It definitely has some similarities, because certainly with yoga you are in the moment as well with your body, but I think mindfulness training focuses more on stillness and breathing like meditation would. But I think beyond that, of just living in the moment where you're not thinking about what you're going to be doing 5 minutes from now, or in the moment with the conversations where you're able to listen because you're not thinking about what your response is going to be. I mean, there are many ways to be in the moment. In a conversation, you are there with the person and listening well. In taking a walk, You can be in the moment with how it feels to move your muscles and how it feels to be breathing the fresh air, assuming you're able to breathe the fresh air. And as opposed to thinking about what you're going to say next, what you have to do when you get to work, when you're taking your walk, but being in the moment of enjoying whatever your immediate surroundings are and whoever you're with and that is right in front of you, whoever you're talking to on the phone, that you're in the moment of enjoying that experience and not running off and thinking about what you're going to be doing next week or in the next hour or what demands are on you that are not related to that particular moment. Anita, you have a comment? Let me get you the microphone.
My grandmother is in an assisted living facility in Iowa, and one of the things that she is not permitted to do, all the residents are not permitted to watch soap operas. Well, because if you think about it in terms of a wandering mind, is that they're not focused in their own reality. They're drawn into the reality of something that's not real. And so, but that goes along with being part of the mindfulness and being present. There's a book written by Dr. Bruce Lipton. He's a scientist, and he wrote the book, The Biology of Belief. And one of the things he says in the book, and it's true, he's a scientist, is that every 7 years we generate an entire new body. Now, some organs take longer to produce, but that's, you know, that's part of the 7 years. But we are always shedding skin, shedding everything. And part of it is part of his belief and belief of a lot of New Thought writers like Louise Hay is your thoughts matter quite a bit. They matter completely. And that's part of being in that present moment, being aware of your thoughts, being aware of where you are, always being present.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's thanks, Anita. That is a good point that you were making about being aware of your thoughts, because sometimes I've seen this a lot with people that move into being depressed, is they automatically think about negative thoughts. That's the first thing that just enters their mind. Now, if they're aware and they're monitoring their minds and they're monitoring their thoughts, then they can take control and have a dialogue with that negativity and look at the, instead of looking at the glass that's half empty, be looking at the glass that, the other side of that, the glass that's half full. And a lot of the automatic thoughts about I'm not adequate, I can't do anything, you know, the exaggerated negativity can really be monitored and changed if you pay attention in the moment. You had a comment here? Let me bring this to you.
Yes, I've got it.
I agree. I'm Isabel, and you know, I'm a social worker by training, and I know a lot of what they focus is on cognitive behavioral therapy, which focuses on changing your thought process and stopping your negative thoughts. And I'm guilty of this myself, okay? So I do it myself, but that's what I would teach my clients. But I keep thinking of what I've learned in, like, conferences where they said, for depression, they said having a good attitude goes a long way. And they had said too that more women get depressed than men, and they think it's hormonal. And they talked about how exercise, for some reason, does help with mild to moderate depression. And another thing that I learned is that. And my mom is always guilty of this, right? When I talk to her, how are you doing? She's, oh, she gets worried about me in L.A. There's a lot of violence. And I'm like, Mom, you're watching too much news. And they say, and it's true, you know, people are guilty, and I am too, of right before you go to bed, you watch the news. That's the worst thing you can do, because they said it's the last thing that's on your mind. So when you go to bed, you're not going to bed happy, right? So I was thinking of Charles when he reads, you know, reading helps with your, and I'm guilty of this too. I need to read more. I'm guilty of a lot of stuff. But this is what I've learned. So I just wanted to share this. So, you know, I don't watch a lot. I try to avoid watching the news, especially if I'm not in a good place in my life or whatever. Like if there was, like I know when my dad passed away, I avoided the watching the news because I wasn't in a good place. And I don't watch reality shows because I feel that there's a lot of comparison to what you don't have, or you're avoiding. It is a form of avoiding, like, reality, your own reality. I guess some people think it's fun. I don't think it's fun because it's not true. It's, you're not living in the moment. So I don't find pleasure in looking at those reality shows myself, unless it's something positive, you know. Like, I love The Voice because it's always positive. Even, you know, it's always good stuff. So so I just wanted to share some of that stuff. So.
Okay, well, you know, I think Isabel brought up another important issue that in terms of taking care of ourselves and our health and our mental health, and that is a lot of people have sleep disturbances as they get older, and there's been a lot of research on sleep deprivation lately that shows that how much it impacts your ability to function, both mentally and physically. I think that there's been some research that shows that if you don't get enough sleep, your brain function is affected as though you've been as though you've been drinking too much. And so getting sleep is very, very important, and I think a lot of people do have sleep disturbances, and there are ways that you can deal with that by, as you were saying, not having something that agitates you that you're watching just before you go to sleep, trying to sleep at going to bed at the same hour, getting up at the same hour, not eating late or drinking late, and not having a lot of distractions in the bedroom, like the TV going or the radio going or something like that, and to have a soothing, comfortable atmosphere. Because sleep is definitely very critical. The other thing I think people have mentioned is the sense of humor and being able to laugh, and how healthy that is, and being able to laugh at yourself. And see the amusing side of things instead of the negative side of things. So sometimes in some therapies, they've actually found that watching old comedies or listening to George Burns shows or something like that, just to get some laughter going, is very good for the soul. Yeah. Yes, Charles. Mike, I'm sorry.
Yeah. My wife likes to watch Ellen DeGeneres. She has a show every day, and she tells me what's going on. She's sighted. I'm totally blind. And she tells me what's going on and how she dances up and down the aisles and how she talks to people and what they say. She thinks that's a great show.
Okay, I'm going to open it up to see if anybody has any specific questions. Yes. There's a question over here.
My question, this is Marie from San Gabriel Valley. There was a wonderful piece that was on 60 Minutes not too long ago, and it went into octarians, and I think it's relevant to all of us. Probably not even, 60 and above, probably before that. It had to do with love and affection, and it was wonderful. And these people, are giggling, 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds. And it was very good, so I like your comments on that.
Okay, so your question was having a close physical relationship and how healthy that is? Absolutely. I think I'd alluded to also having a confidant, and then also intimacy is extremely healing to a lot of people. And also for people that are isolated, they really long for that. Now, sometimes I think that's where there are some benefits to having a pet in the home, because you can have that without, even if you're not in a relationship, you can still have some form of affection with an animal, with your dog, if you don't have a dog, with a cat. And so I think that the touch, the sensation of touch and the experience of that is very, very healing. Anybody else have any questions?
Yes, Charles. Let me get you there. I got it.
I lost my sight at age 19. So my 20s were not only involved with going to college, but also being very angry and depressed. So I self-medicated a lot. I was a heavy marijuana user. But over time, that, became unsatisfactory, and it was a cause for depression. So more recently, I've been on a low dose of Celexa. And I find that to be satisfactory. It doesn't affect my mental capacities and just keeps an edge off. But, what's the long-term effects of that?
Are you talking about the long-term effects of that particular medication? I'm not an expert on pharmacology, I'm afraid, but I think that's a good question to ask. And it's good when you are taking medications to be very informed, not only about what the side effects are, but as you're saying, what are the long-term effects? And then the other thing to be very aware of and get the information you need about is the interactions. So somebody needs to be looking at all the medications that you're taking, and that includes over-the-counter and supplements, and determine what the interactions might be so that you can be on the lookout for any issues, and you can see if there are any synergies between the medications that you need to be aware of that would affect the dosage. So certainly talking to the pharmacist and the doctor and knowing what it is you're taking, being knowledgeable about what you put in your body is very, very important. So I would definitely find that out from your doctor, Charles. Any other comments? Well, you've been a very engaged group of people, and it's been fun. So if you have any questions afterwards, just let me know.
Thank you, LaDonna. We appreciate you pinch hitting, and you were the whole panel discussion yourself. And thank you, everyone, for participating and being flexible. We will be scheduling a call in January. Also, I want to tell you, our center does have support groups for seniors. If you know anyone that might like a support group,
we do some mindfulness. We do a little bit of brain exercise at times. And people are very connected and support each other. We have a senior support group, and we also have one for younger adults at the Center for the Partially Sighted. And you can always call me in our Tarzana office. And you could talk to me later. Anyway, thank you, everyone, for coming and supporting our seniors. And if you would like to speak with me afterwards and be on our phone list, I would be glad to put you on. And I'm hoping to schedule a conference call in January. Thank you.